And welcome to the McLean Chronicles. My name is Ross McLean, the podcast that I've put together for you to take the complicated, complex issues of life and make them just a little bit more simple so that you can work with them and find your own way through this world. Now, the title for my podcast tonight is a little interesting. I'm calling it The Politician, The Bureaucrat, The Intellectual Elite, or the man in the arena. Which of them is to be trusted? You know, our world today, you're inundated with people who want to run your life for you. Politicians who want to make value judgments for you. Bureaucrats who put together administrative law to force you to do what the government wants you to do. And then there's always the intellectual elite who are there, who they think they know what's best for everybody because they're smart and they know what they're doing. And they're quick to be quoted in the media about what they think the solution is to the world. However, there's a problem with all of these ones that we've just mentioned. None of them are the actual man in the arena. The man in the arena is the person who's actually done or built something. You know, it was a famous poem that was actually made quite famous by President Roosevelt when he read this one section, which I'm going to read to you in a minute, that talks about the value of someone who's actually done the work before. And the issue today is we've got people telling you how to run your life, making rules for you how to run your life, putting up barriers for you for how to run your life, and they've never really accomplished anything themselves, or they're outside their own area of expertise. So let's take a listen here to the very, very important words read by President Roosevelt and repeated by many presidents and others quite often about the man in the arena. The man in the arena. It is not the critic who counts, nor the one who points out how the strong person stumbled, or where the doer of a deed could have done better. The credit belongs to the person who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. Who does actually strive to do the deeds? It's the man in the arena who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotion, who spends oneself in a worthy cause. It's the man in the arena who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he or she fails, at least fails while daring greatly. Far better it is to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, and even though checkered by failure, than to rank with those timid spirits who neither enjoy nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows neither victory or defeat. So what I want to talk to you about now is, how do you weigh evidence? How do you figure out what the right thing to do is in this world that's just covered with disinformation, with everybody telling you what your value should be and how you should live? How do you weigh that so you can make a good decision? Well, I'm going to take a look at critical thinking through the mind and the reasoning of some of the greatest minds that have done critical thinking in the past before, and help to pass on to you just a few things that you can use to look at when you're trying to weigh the evidence of what you're hearing and how to make a decision. And I'll tell you, with a spoiler alert right off the bat, it's the man in the arena whose evidence carries the most weight in my courtroom. You know, today our media is full of intellectual elites who believe because they're smart in one area, they know how to fix everything, and they just think it through in their mind, and magically they come up with the answer, and there it is, and there's how we should all spend our time and our money, because it makes sense in their mind. Those would be the intellectual elite who many of them, and I'll show you by a few examples, are really just lost, and they're lost and they're arrogant in their own intellectual belief in themselves. Then you have the intellectual lightweights. You know, many of these are the crazy lefties of today. The ones who believe because they read something, or someone who they like said something to them, or there's something they really want to have happen in this world that they believe that this is the way that the world should be, because they believe that it's true and it bears weight, because it seems good to them in their mind that that's how we should all live, based on what they believe to be true. I've had experiences at different times talking with, certainly in person and in media sometimes, with lefties. And when I say lefties, I don't mean classic liberals. I mean these lefties that are out there. They'll say some just wildly crazy thing as if it's true. And I'll say to them, where's your evidence for that? Just because you say it, it's not true. Why don't you give me some examples and some proof for this conclusion you've come to for how we should all lead our lives? And they look at me with eyes wide open, saying, well, you're just terrible if you don't believe me. It's what we all believe. Well, let me tell you, consensus of what a group believes is no more evidence of anything than just the crazy people who make it up in their mind. Consensus is not science. Consensus is not proof. That's not real evidence. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about how to find and discover real evidence, so you don't get stuck in these arguments with these people who just believe everything that they say. They just believe it because they said it's true and they want it to be true. They're everywhere today. Now let's talk about the issue of experts. This is a fascinating thing to me. As soon as an expert says something, people today, they just believe it. We saw a lot of talk, of course, with experts over the course of the COVID pandemic, or plandemic, based on how you want to look at it, for what happened. We had experts telling us all sorts of things. And people just would accept it. I mean, that's what happened. But this happens in all sorts of areas. Let me tell you about an experiment that I know was done. I read about this actually about 15 years ago. They ran this experiment. It was very interesting to me. What happens, they had a group of people sit down and they wanted to see how their brains worked and how they considered stuff when they were looking for themselves or when they were looking with an expert opinion. So they used this example. They would sit somebody down and they would say, here's a bunch of data on five different types of family cars that somebody could use. I want you to try and pick out, which car do you think would be the best for this family? It's a husband and wife with one toddler and then 1 5-year-old. Which vehicle should they use for the best gas mileage? What's the best deal for reliability? And they'd give the people the data on the five different cars, maybe a bunch of magazines, and they would look it up and they'd watch their brains and they'd watch how their brains would light up, and they'd sit there and they'd calculate, they'd compare mileage, they'd look at engine size and reliability ratings and all those sort of things, which is what you're doing when you're doing critical thinking. Then they tried it again with some different people, and they said to them the same problem. Here, we want to pick out this car for this family, and here's the five different cars we're looking at. We want you to analyze and look at them. However, here's two different experts. These experts each pick a different car, but they say it would be the best one for the family. So here's all the information. Why don't you have a look at this and tell us which one you would recommend for the family? And something strange happened. Maybe not that strange. What they noticed the people did, they stopped looking for data. They stopped looking at all the information. What they did was they looked at the two experts, and they read what the two experts said. And then they could see their brains deciding, well, which expert do I trust more? Which one seems more reliable? And so they were only checking between the two variables. Which expert should I go for? They didn't check any of the subdata. They don't know if these experts were right or wrong. But because they were experts, their brain shut off, their critical thinking shut off, and they just looked, do I trust the expert? And that's how they made decisions. Well, that was very telling for me, because when you see someone tell you they're an expert and how it works, a lot of people, we just shut off our brains. We don't bother looking anymore. We just believe them. It's easier just to believe them and move on. You know, and who might be the expert in your life today? Is it the news when they put on the doctor telling you what you should do with the getting an injection in your body or not? Is that who you believe because they have the title doctor? I mean, back in the day, they used to have the ads where they said doctors recommended cigarette smoking and all sorts of different things that doctors have recommended. They've recommended, they've given out all sorts of drugs that have resulted in the deaths of lots of people in doing things. So who do you listen to? Or is Google maybe your expert? Google, which is the best car that I should buy? You know, and then you look. And do you just take that? Or do you do any further investigation yourself? You really have to ask yourself, am I actually thinking this through? Particularly if it's a decision that's going to bend the arc of your life, which way you're going to go to do something. Are you going to look into it? Now, this also brings me back to the man in the arena. Look at it this way. If I was going out, let's say, I wanted to buy a camera lens for a camera that I was working on. Well, I know this one particular guy. He's a cinematographer. He's a director. He spent his whole life doing work with cameras and lighting and everything. And I would go to him and I'd say, hey, which one of these cameras lenses should I buy? This is what I want to do. He might ask me a couple of questions, but then he'd say this one. You'll win with this one. You know what? I know that that particular person in that field is the man in the arena. They've done the battles. They've spilt the blood. They've made mistakes. They've found out what works, and they go with what works because they've got experience and knowledge, not just information. I'm going to talk to you a bit about that, the difference between knowledge and information. There are vast differences there. You might think the same thing if you were looking to buy anything in particular. Let's say you knew a guy who was who owned a car dealership. And he could tell you, you could go to him, and he was a trusted family friend. I just don't mean an acquaintance because they're still making sales. And you'd say, which one of the used cars on the lot here should I buy? And they would look and they'd talk to the mechanics and they'd say this one. If you really trust them and they know and you know that they love you, you can go with that feeling pretty good about what you're doing. But ask yourself today, am I just shutting off my mind and my critical thinking because an expert says it to me, an expert on TV, an expert who's got a point of view and a narrative that they're pushing because they're being paid to push a certain narrative? And I can talk to you a little bit, and we will, a little bit about how wrong and bad experts can be when they get out of their lane or when they're paid to produce a certain result. Now is probably a good time to talk about the difference between information and knowledge. To a lot of people, it's interchangeable, those two terms, that they have enough information or they have knowledge. But let's be clear about this. When it comes to decision making and critical thinking, they are not at all the same. Information is completely different from knowledge. Let me give you a basic example about that. I could take somebody and say, here, why don't you go on the internet and learn all the information you can about swimming? Read all the books you can about swimming. And if they've never swam before, I can pick them up and then throw them in the pool, and they're going to drown. Having information is not by itself good enough for being able to make a decision. Knowledge is what is needed. Now, I heard a very interesting definition of knowledge this way, that knowledge is something that can't really be passed on in a book. It can't really be passed on in a video or even a podcast, per se. What knowledge is having worked with information long enough that you know what works and what doesn't. Thomas Edison, he could tell you a million ways not to make a light bulb because he tried. He worked at it. So you have people today who, when they're looking for an answer, they jump on Google, or they jump on, in these days, AI, a ChatGPT. But you know all they are? That's just an amalgamation of information put together with opinions and all sorts of biases that may be built in there, and it gives you an answer. Now, sometimes based on the answer you need, maybe that's quick and good enough, and maybe for a small decision, it's good enough to just find your information that way. But if it's a serious decision, one that's going to impact your life, perhaps about who you should marry, what house you should buy, what career you should look at, some other major decision in your life, you just don't want to go with a little bit of information and a search. So the people who have knowledge, for instance, they would be people, well, let's take the game of golf. I used to play the game of golf and I liked it a lot. I read lots of books on golf and none of it started applying and none of it got good till I went out into the arena or out onto the golf course and started trying to do what intellectually I was told was the information I needed to do. But I needed to learn how to make that work in the real world. You know, so often the problem is, and these are the intellectuals, they think because they can think in their mind that they can do it, that it's as good as done. That would be the person, if you asked them if they could hit a golf ball 300 yards down the middle of a fairway into a stiff breeze. Well, intellectually I could. I've never hit a golf ball before in my life, but I can picture myself swinging and hitting it and making it go there. Well, that's not someone you want to take advice from. You want to get someone who can look at you, they've done the work, they know what it takes, they can see your mistakes, they can make corrections to your mistakes, you work at correcting your mistakes, and that's where you gain knowledge. So it's a very interesting thing today. I remember talking to a professor that I know, very learned guy. We were discussing about this. What knowledge is important for people to know today? You know, sometimes you can get by with information about what you're going to do, what you're going to buy, where's the best restaurant to go to in downtown this city. You can pick one out and go to it. It's not a life-changing decision. But if you want to start thinking about a career or what your skill set is, or how to make yourself better, you better have some pretty strong knowledge about that. That means you have to work with it. And I think that's what's missing today with so many people, is they don't have a lane that they work in, that they know, that they gain knowledge in, that you can then be paid well to operate in, or you can operate well within that arena. So there's a very big difference. Don't ever confuse having a lot of information with having knowledge. The next part that adds to that, though, there's an old saying that knowledge is power, right? It's not really true. There's parts of that missing to that saying. Knowledge only becomes power when you employ it, when you use it. So you could be a great woodworker, carpenter, but you never go and build anything. So there's no real power to you having that knowledge. You're not really using it. But the next issue that comes with knowledge is wisdom. And the short saying for this is wisdom would be knowing when to apply your knowledge. Sometimes you're better off not being applying it. Let's talk a little bit. Maybe we'll have a bit of fun here. A husband and a wife, they come home, the typical thing. She comes home frustrated with her day, starts telling her problems, and then the husband starts applying the knowledge, telling her all the ways to fix the things, because that's what he wants to do. He wants to help her and fix her. Of course, what she's doing is just wants to express it. She doesn't really want to hear about how to fix it. So that would be a time when wisdom would tell you, why don't you just listen? This isn't the time to try to apply your knowledge. And, you know, many times, particularly if you're helping someone to learn something, if you're raising kids or you have a student or you're mentoring someone, you have to look at them, watch them when they're trying, and not do everything for them. You have to let them go out, skin their knees, learn, and figure it out for themselves. Otherwise, you end up like so many kids today. What's the story they talk about some of the kids now? Every time they'd have a problem at school or at work, they call their mom and say to the teacher, you're going to have to deal with my mom. Or they'd say to the boss, you're going to have to deal with my mom. Because they don't know how to figure things out for themselves. They immediately turn to someone else to think, make the decision, or put the leverage on for them. Well, that doesn't make for a very strong, independent person. So that's just another pretty key area. When you have knowledge and wisdom, you have to let people learn. And then you can tell them afterwards, I saw that. Hey, let me help you with this. make this small change here and see if that works better for you. But if you just go build the project or do all the work for them, you're not helping anybody at all. And I think that's one of the concerns we have with this world going forward, with information being so available and experts supposedly being everywhere, that people have just given up on thinking. They don't think anymore, and they're not critical. Another area that you need to be very critical in looking at is when someone is giving you a decision or an expert opinion based on modeling, where they put together numbers and they say, oh, look, this is how it's going to be. This is going to be the outcome of this, whether it's an investment that they want you to make, a car they want you to buy, or a climate fear thing that they want to push to you. So one of the issues with modeling is this. It's not a real-world thing. It's not done in the arena. It's done with a bit of math, with a graph, and by making some assumptions about absolutes on complex issues. So you'll have something very complex, and they'll say, well, it's a given that the Earth is this warm, and it could get this, and they put a bunch of givens around it, and then they do their math on the inside, never necessarily knowing if the parameters and the borders that they're putting around their modeling are actually the correct borders, or they're measuring the correct thing. So when someone tells you they've got modeling that tells you how something is going to work out, you really have to look skeptically at what they're saying and what their base assumptions are for how they come to their conclusions, and also who's paying them. You know, I've had the benefit of being around some fairly wealthy people in my life, and they will tell you that when they go look at a company and someone gives them the balance sheet, or they want someone to invest and they say, here's our projections of how our company is going to do. The real tough people, the men and women who've been in the arena, they don't just take a projection and a number that somebody says that they look at on there as if it's going to be real. When they're putting their money or their time into something, they take a much more skeptical look about the assumptions, who the players are, have they done this before, how can they actually move this ahead, what does the macro environment look like, what are all the issues that are going to be faced, are these the people that can face them? They can face them nicely on a graph and a spreadsheet where they put in numbers. They can face them there, but what's the real world answer for it? So I would be very skeptical, or at least know how to do the modeling or read the numbers yourself to find out where the lies are. There's a lot of lies on balance sheets. There's a lot of lies going on right now in the commercial banking for commercial real estate, actually, about what the value of commercial real estate is and whether or not banks are going to be facing collapses. They're finding different ways of modeling and showing you the different numbers and using different words when they tell you about how the money is doing. So be very skeptical of people who say that they're doing modeling to tell you how you should put your money into something. It actually makes me mindful of a bit of a joke that they used to tell about that. When you're graphing something as an investment, someone said, let's say you're graphing the life of a turkey for how it's doing. Well, you have it born here at the bottom left, and as it gets older, it grows, it gets taller, it weighs more, it starts going up to the right where the graph is going, till it gets really, really, really fat until November rolls around and Thanksgiving. Then all of a sudden, the chart drops off because the turkey has been used for Thanksgiving. So just because there's past performance, it doesn't indicate to you where the future is necessarily going. You have to have a skeptical look. And for that, it takes a little bit of knowledge. So work to get knowledge yourself. Do the homework to do it, particularly in the areas that are going to be most important to your life being successful. Let's have another look at experts. Perhaps even people who you trust and you know, like we were saying before, who you've got a lot of faith in, because they are the man or the woman in that arena, and they know that arena. But should you ask them for advice about things that are outside of their area of expertise? Should you ask the top real estate investor person you know for marital advice or how to raise your children or medical advice? Like, what happens when people get out of their lanes? And I've seen this before. We used to say this back when I was on the police department. There used to be the joke, and it carried over to the corporate world. when somebody got promoted, they had their frontal lobotomy, they had part of their brain taken out. That was the joke. But I used to see this actually in the corporate world, in very large companies, successful companies, and with people. When you get that promotion to a certain level, and you know, one of those levels might be vice president in particular, or senior director in a large company, that's a very up near the top sort of position person. And when you get up there, all of a sudden, the whole company and all kinds of people now are beholding to you. And they're asking you questions, and they're telling you you're so smart, and when you make a suggestion, they love you. They basically run around kissing your behind all over the place. And what I've noticed people doing is some of them start to believe their own press more or less. Because everything they say, everybody asks them, and they make pronouncements, and people run off and do the things. They say, go do this. Yes, I think we should do that. And it goes and happens. And quite often, they start to think that they're infallible, and anything that they deem is to be a solution for something, it should be right, that it'll be right, that it'll turn out well. But that's not how it goes. The really good people, someone either tells them to watch out for that, or they catch themselves in it for doing it. I've had a point in my life where I had that happen, where I was starting to pontificate and being asked to pontificate on some things by people. And I didn't really feel terribly comfortably doing it, and I did it. But then I realized I'm not that good in that area. So whenever I would get involved in the media, or someone would ask me to do something, I'd always say, well, what's the subject or what's the purpose? And if it was something that wasn't in my lane, something that I didn't have good knowledge about to be able to add something to the argument, I'd say, look, get somebody else. I'd recommend somebody else. Or I'd say, look, if you need me to talk for a little bit, but I'm not going to go in depth on this, if the interviewer or the show was really, really stuck on something, I would talk. But I would not talk like I was the knowledgeable expert. And I was also very careful to say if something was my opinion or something from my knowledge. So that's just an important place to look at when someone gets out of their lane. What was the other anecdotal story I heard about that? If you're looking at someone who's a very good investor, don't ask them what you should buy when you see that person. Ask them what they own. Because people's actions really speak a lot louder than their words or their opinions. They might say, you should do this, you should do that, but they're not doing it. You know, to get back to our lefties again, I can remember watching many times when they were saying, oh, we need mass immigration, we need all these refugees, all these people need to come in, they should all come in. And then the interviewer would ask them, oh, are you taking any in? Are you going to take any in your house? Oh, well, no, I can't. Certainly, I can't do that. Other people should do that. So their opinion is everybody else should do something, but it's not going to be them. So that's really virtual signaling. So when you see people virtual signaling, and this is what we have all over today with lefties and the different governments, they're out there saying, we need to do this, we need to do that. I mean, look at everybody telling you to cut back on your carbon usage. They're on yachts and on jets and flying around, and they're burning up more carbon than anybody. And they're the ones telling you that you should have an electric scooter or a bicycle to get around on for doing something. So once again, don't trust people when it comes to that sort of thing. Judge them by their actions, not so much by their virtual good intentions. Let's have a few more examples now of when experts get out of their lane. Even if they're very, very, very good experts and they're highly touted, what happens to them when they get out of their lane? You know, part of where I drew a lot of my knowledge from is by reading Thomas Sowell. He's the black economist who's written numerous books on things like decision-making, about intellectuals, about the truth of the way things really work, and it's sufficiently different from the narrative that gets put around, as I said, by so-called experts or narratives or talking heads or politicians. So one of the things he talked about, and I'm going to use his example, it really makes the case. You could take somebody, let's say you knew somebody and they were a very experienced, let's put them as a vice president of a major accounting firm, just a major Fortune 50 whatever accounting firm. They're a vice president. They got their CA degree behind them. They probably even have four or five more letters behind them. They do a lot of work in accounting. This is someone who is extremely smart and someone who, if you were doing something with your taxes or a business, you certainly want to go to them to get the information. But what happens when that person gets out of his lane? Does all that knowledge help them? Is he or she going to be just that good? Let's take that person who's got such knowledge, the VP of the accounting firm. Take them to a little farm on the Midwest. Take them into that country kitchen with a little 5 or 6 year old boy sitting there, perhaps. And then say to that person, we have a job for you. Here's a pail. Go out to that barn you see out yonder and bring us back a pail of milk if you could, please. We'd like to see one here. And they'd go, ooh, okay. And maybe they'd jump on their phone and they'd start Googling or looking on YouTube for how to milk a cow, how to go out and do it. And I'm sure that if you waited maybe an hour later, they'd probably come back in resigned with an empty pail and no milk. They wouldn't know what to do. Then you could say, well, here, go a little Billy or little Susie. They'll go out with you. They grab the pail, little 5 or 6 year old, out to the barn, and next thing you know, 20 minutes later, they're back with a pail of milk. You see, having all the information in the world, like that VP had in accounting, doesn't help you in another environment. It doesn't help that you don't have any knowledge. You can't necessarily get anything done. You know, the more extreme version of that example is you take that same person and go drop them in the middle of an Amazon rainforest and leave them there. They very likely would die within a couple of days or a week because they wouldn't know how to eat. They wouldn't know how to stay away from dangerous bugs. There'd be malaria. Maybe an animal would get them. They wouldn't know how to survive. So just because someone has a ton of information or a ton of knowledge, or they're in the arena in one area, does not automatically make it transferable that they know so much in another area. That's sort of what I was talking about before, when you have someone get out of their lane. And we see them all the time getting out of their lane in media and politicians. They're pontificating. I mean, there's a minister of finance that's working that's never done a paycheck before, never ran a business and didn't have a mortgage until they were halfway through their life. And they're out there deciding how the finances are going to work for a country. So we have this lots of places. I mean, we see it completely with politicians. I mean, whenever they do these shuffles and they move people from transportation to industry to foreign affairs or whatever, these people don't have any experience in there. They've got the bureaucrats that are really running the show, if you will. So really be careful before you let some of these people outside of their lane make decisions that are going to impact the journey for your life. Be very, very careful of that. Another big game that's used these days is polls and surveys that are being put out by the media. This is just, to me, I think it's one of the most corrupt practices going today, in my opinion, is the polling. The polling industry. In my opinion, it's filled with charlatans who, once again, they use modeling and numbers to come out with an answer, and you don't always know their inputs, their narrative, who's paying them, what other deals they have, and what they get. I knew this one old war horse. This was a guy who was a man in the arena. He had been around the world. Done a lot of amazing things, worked with a lot of very senior, powerful people around the world. In fact, he was very influential with bringing Nelson Mandela to North America and getting things done for Nelson. Anyways, this was a guy who'd been in the arena. And I asked him before about what his thought was on polling. This is going way back. I said, you know, Ray, can you tell me how polls work? And he looked at me and he said, polls say whatever I want them to say. I would never do a poll, he says, unless I knew what the outcome as I wanted was. That's the only poll that I would commission. That's the only poll that I would publish. And this was a guy who had been around the block. So I trusted him at his word with what he had said. And then I started putting my own critical thinking on when I'd watched some of these pollsters and how they'd behave and what they'd say and the modeling that they would do, the tricks they have when they're doing their questions. It's just phenomenal. I mean, today what's really bad is it used to be in polling, the whole basis of polling, I'm going to get a little inside baseball here for a second, is that it's a random sample of people that usually numbers above the number of 1,200 people. That's what's generally accepted as a decent level of polling with a truly random database of people. You can come to some mathematical conclusion about what the country or people may be thinking, but they don't do that anymore with the advent of the internet and cell phones. I mean, there's polling companies now that have members that they pay and they give rewards to for surveys they fill out, and they include them in the polls when they do stuff. That is not an independent database of people that you're pooling from to get the answers. So the polls are just garbage. There's other tricks where the way they ask the questions and the direction they ask the questions in can lead you to answering the way they want it answered. And then they can also weight the polls by, well, we didn't have enough of these people, so we're going to gin it up this way to make it more even. And they put all this math around it to make it sound like it's good. But it is just a real game today. If you're going to look at any polls, you really need to learn a little bit about how they're done and only look for ones that are more or less the gold standard, as I said, that are approved and peer-reviewed for how they do it, where they have a large number of actually independently picked people that are questioned in a correct manner, where you can also see the questions and see the data. You know, so often today I laugh because I see the media. They say polls say this and polls say that, but they don't even include a link to the poll. They don't even tell you who did it, or they won't even tell you what the data is. But it's used as something to make people lean in a direction. It's a great narrative to help take money out of your pocket. That's why they're doing it, is to take money out of your pocket. So be very skeptical and use your critical thinking when it comes to someone telling you there's a poll or a survey about how you should think. I mean, I remember Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady. She actually came to speak at an event. It was like, I think it was $25,000 a table, an event she came to speak at. And she was speaking at a particularly tough political time. And I was there with some clients that I had, and I listened to her speak. And one of her famous lines would be that consensus is only for people who don't know what to do. They don't know how to lead. If you know how to lead, you know what the right thing is to do. You go and do it. You don't take a poll or a vote amongst a bunch of people as to which direction you should go for doing something. You're not really a leader. If you lead by consensus, you're not really a leader. I'm not taking away from the Democratic vote, if you will, but when it comes to deciding where you should go. I mean, you're all lost in the desert, and everybody votes whether you should go left or right, and there's a consensus you should go right, but you happen to have somebody there who's a woodsman and a cowboy and he knows his way around, and he says, no, this is the way that we go to get out. You don't go with the consensus. So don't be fooled by these people who say that consensus or 90% of scientists agree or something like that. That is not evidence. That's someone trying to sway you because they don't have the real goods to make the case. I want to give you another little insight story that I have a real life example for that I saw, but is summed up very well by this quote from C.K. Chesterton, an old British, I think he was a Catholic writer, newspaper person. Boy, did this guy have some good quotes. He had this one quote, though. It really sticks with me. I hope it sticks with you. When you're out in the country and you see a fence, or it's on your property you just bought, and you see a fence that's up there, he says, don't take that fence down until you find out why it was put up in the first place. And that is such a wise, knowledgeable saying, because A lot of times people come by, well, why is this here? Let's change this. We don't need that. Intellectually, take that down. Move that over here. Off they go pronouncing stuff without really understanding why something is the way that it is. And they go off and they start making wholesale changes without knowing the history of why some decisions are made. Now, I'll try and tell you quickly. I worked in this one large company. We were going through some downturns. We were looking how to save money. It was a large company, 1,200 people in this one office, in any event. And one of the things we had there were coffee stations, you know, throughout the buildings. Everybody has to have coffee. You want to keep everybody juiced and caffeinated to work. But at the coffee stations were these Tetra Pak packages of, like, cream. You know that cream that you can get that doesn't have to be refrigerated? Maybe it's an oil-based product or something. They had one that was a cream and one that was a light cream, and they sat there in these boxes. So we had one person in an executive meeting. It was all sort of directors and up for this meeting. And we were talking about ways to save money because the company knew it had to save. We were heading into a recession at the time. And this person pipes up and says, well, look, it. I don't understand why. I looked into it. Those boxes of cream that we have, they cost like $8 a piece, and we've got a bunch of them everywhere. He says, they're not that good. He says, $8 for that little box of cream and they go bad and they don't taste that good? I think we can save money by no longer buying those boxes of cream. He says, I think what we should do is we should just get our own milk. Milk is so much cheaper than doing all that. So if we just get the milk, I can get a bag of milk for $3. It'll do, it's 10 times as much for doing the coffees as that is. And he had this great idea. And he managed to talk a few people into it enough that they said, okay, why don't you go ahead and make that happen? Okay, I thought this was very interesting. I thought, how is this person, because I knew this person at the time was out of their lane. They were talking about something they didn't know, they didn't research. He didn't know why that fence was put up. So he goes and he starts thinking it through in some of his sub-meetings. He says, okay, so let's see, we got to get milk. So what do we need for that? A bunch of little fridges at all the coffee stations. So he had to go out and buy about 15 or 20 fridges for all the different coffee stations. Didn't factor that into his cost savings. The fridges, they're going to need outlets nearby so that they can get plugged in. There's no outlets at the coffee station. Call the electrician in and put in all the new plugs so that you can plug it in. You're going to need a little bit of a drain somewhere because sometimes the fridges, they get ice build up and then they can leak and it needs, so you're going to need some way of capturing the runoff or the extra drain so you don't damage the floor. Okay, let's get the plumber in. We didn't figure that all out. Okay, let's see. We're going to get the bags of milk. Who's going to go buy the bags of milk? Oh, wow. We hadn't thought about that. Everybody's really pretty busy. Well, we'll get one of the cleaners to run out and buy the bags of milk. But then they said, well, when are they going to go buy them? Who's going to check to see when you run out of a bag of milk? Or who's going to check and see if a bag of milk has gone sour and bad? Where does that go? You just can't put it in the garbage. Oh, yeah, that's not going to work out too well. Well, we don't want them running all the time to the store. Well, why don't we buy one of those big freezers, like you see that they put Coca-Cola and everything in, and we'll put that in the basement. We can buy a whole pile of bags of milk and put them all in there at once, and then we're not running to the store. We can take them out of there, and we can bring them up, and we can put them at the coffee stations. Well, who's going to do that? We hadn't considered that. Maybe we need to hire somebody to run to refill all the milk at all the coffee stations. That'll just be their job, looking after the coffee stations. Well, you can see where this went. It cost a darn fortune to try and put in this implementation of time and labor and money and dissatisfaction by somebody who thought they had a great idea. They thought about it. And after that, it made me realize that's why somebody sells those $7. So that's when I figured out. That's why somebody can sell those $7 Tetra Pak packages of cream. There's a reason for it, and it's economical as to why it works. And I always ask myself when I see sometimes something that doesn't make sense to me, and I think in my own mind why there'd be a better way, and I like to dig into it a little bit, and I'll find out some of the things that I didn't know or some of the assumptions that I might have had. So you should also do that yourself a little bit. Don't tear down any fences until you figure out why they were put up. do a little bit of investigating. You know, the old carpenter saying of measure twice and cut once. Make sure what you're doing makes sense before you invest your time in it. So I hope I've given you some ideas of things to think about to help you have more critical thinking, particularly about the important decisions in your life. Because right now, we have got politicians, groups, pollsters, intellectually elite people, activist people, and some mentally bent people that are out running around setting the parameters for the rules of life that you're going to live in. Learn how to think for yourself critically. Teach your children how to think critically. Help your friends how to think a little bit more critically. And really rely on that person in the arena when you go to make a decision about something. Ask them for their decisions and why they do it. Look at their background. And I just hope that for you, your family, you can help us as a society. We have to get better at our critical thinking. I worry so much about the young people of today that grew up thinking that Google and the internet is all the answers, and that nobody who's older has any ideas. I worry about them because they're disregarding all of the knowledge and the sweat and the blood that was put together to bring our society to where it's been today. And they're accepting ideas, policies, rules that are going to make their life worse. Even the simplest of critical thinking, looking at it, you would see it. But the bully pulpit of go along with the crowd is huge. You know, they did a famous experiment. I am going to do a full podcast on this at another time. They use psychology, these groups, when they're working against you. So they did this experiment. This was done back, I think, in the 40s or 50s. When I speak about it more in another podcast, I'll put it up. Anyways, they would bring people into a room. The one person would be the subject. The nine other people would be in on the game that was being played by the professor when they're making their measurement of how people act. They put them all in a room, like a classroom, and they drew two lines on the board. One line was obviously longer than the other line. So one line was bigger, one line was shorter. And what they did, everybody was in on it, the professor, the nine other people, just not the one little subject person who was there. And they went there and they started off and they said, which line do you think is longer, line A or line B? Now, line B was clearly shorter, but the first person said, line B. Very good, said the professor, and put a check mark. They went to the next person. Line B is longer. Boom, another check mark. The next one, line B, line B, line B. You know, till they finally get to the last person, the little lab rat, if you will, in the experiment, and they ask them, which line is longer, line A or line B? And did you know that something like 80% of the people in the experiment said line B was longer, even though they knew it was shorter? Why? Because of the peer pressure. Because they didn't want to be the one standing out and telling all the others that they were wrong. And so these people, these governments, when they're applying this work to get you to change and bend, don't go against your own common sense. If you see that the line is one line is longer, call the other people out on it. Don't go along with it. Maybe you don't pick a fight on it. It may not be worth it. But don't be that person who just gets intimidated into going along with everything, because that's the majority of people today. And we need to have, going forward, you know, if Elon Musk is going to put people on Mars and they're going to survive, they can't be snowflakes who go along with the consensus. They need to be people with critical thinking, people who've been in the arena, and people who can do the work. My name is Ross McLean, and this is the McLean Chronicles.